I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
We got so much knowledge to share. All the knowledge.
More and more every single day.
I don't know. I feel like it's all there. It's already all there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were born with it.
Again, I've been preparing for this moment since 1993.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about episode 2, The Devil's Window. And since you're so prepared, who wrote this one?
I don't know.
All right. And the director?
I don't know.
Okay. Cool. So the answers to those questions. The Devil's Window was written by David J. Burke and Hans Tobison and directed by Les Landau.
That's nice.
Now, David J. Burke, that's an important name to remember. He is the new executive producer of Sequest DSV.
Yeah.
So as mentioned previously, Tommy Thompson did not work out.
Nope. Did not stick around.
So David J. Burke was hired on. He saw his job as, you know, he's there to write the ship and just get pages into camera. Mm-hmm. That's his job. He's not there to play the network game. He's not there to get involved in studio politics. He's there to say, hey, writers, write this. I'm hiring a director. You shoot it. We got to go. This is costing us $1 to $2 million an episode.
So much money.
We gotta get it right.
Why do you feel like you gotta like show off like that? You're trying to put me in my place.
I just want to demonstrate that the dissemination of knowledge goes in many directions. We also gather. Now, that's what sharing is about. It's about tending the fields of knowledge.
We're tending fields now.
We're sowing. We're reaping.
We're harvesting.
I feel like I'm about to get reaped. Sure.
I'm going to get some corn over here. Some soy. Some sugar beets.
Oh, we are. Well, no, we're not going through that part of the state, but we are leaving for Michigan soon.
They really love their sugar beets there. That is a thing. Michigan sugar is going strong.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't realize that.
Hans Tobison, for his part, was David J. Burke's writing partner on the critically acclaimed miniseries Tribeca that aired earlier that year in 1993.
I've heard of that. What is that about? I don't know what it is.
Linking stories around the Tribeca neighborhood in New York. It's like a real-life drama. There's cop stuff. There's crime stuff.
Okay.
Lawrence Fishburne won an Emmy for Outstanding Guest Actor in Tribeca.
Okay.
So, yeah. Young Morpheus. Imagine that. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that far.
Not that young. 6 years younger Morpheus.
I was like, yes, he was a wee baby. In diapers.
Do you want the wet pill or the blue pill, Neo? I can only show you the door. I cannot open it. I cannot reach. I can't reach the handle, Neo.
I'm not allowed to go outside without an adult. A baby. I can't cross streets.
Neo's fighting Morpheus. He has to stop. That's abuse. Stop it. No.
That would be a very different movie.
Episode director Les Landau, for his part, directed over 45 Star Trek episodes.
That's a lot.
Those are divided between all four of the 90s and 2000 shows. He did one Enterprise just to say he was there.
Yeah.
But also episodes of Charmed, Dark Angel, Lois and Clark.
I watched Dark Angel.
Sliders. He just ran around and shot every science fiction and fantasy TV show. If it had effect sequences, Les Landau would show up.
I really like Dark Angel. I watched like 2 seasons of Charmed. In the middle?
In the middle.
I watched the middle chunks.
You ate the delicious filling of the Charmed sandwich.
I watched when Drew Fuller was on the show as Chris. And that was it. Once he was not there, I did not watch.
So, Darlin, this episode, how does this very second episode begin?
A voiceover over lava.
Yes.
For magma.
And what a voice it is. Yeah. This episode guest stars Roscoe Lee Brown. You may not recognize his face, though you may, because he's been in a million things.
Yes.
But you are certain to recognize that voice, because half a million of those things are voice work.
Yeah, he's got quite a voice.
For all you 70s sci-fi fans, he voiced Box the Robot in Logan's Run.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone like me, he was the Kingpin in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh.
He was the narrator in Babe, Pig in the City. This man's voice has been everywhere.
Oh, Babe, Pig in the City.
And yeah, he's teaching you science on Sequest.
Yeah, he's telling you all about those hydrothermal vents,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the magma below the earth, and
yeah, he is a geophysicist.
Yes.
And
yes,
he is on Sequest to set up a research platform over a lava vent.
Yes. So that way he can drop basically a suppository, they actually call it that at one point in this episode, into it.
Westphalen's classy.
Yes. So they can get readings from mm-hmm. what's going on in there.
He's here to, quote, reach into the birth canal of Mother Earth.
Don't do that. What? She does not want that. That is invasive and rude. Leave her alone.
He doesn't follow the metaphor any farther than that.
I mean, if he really wants to, you know what? Get out of the ship and go shove your arm in there. See how that goes for you. Okay.
But this man is so passionate about his life's work that is culminating in dropping this research platform. Like, he is constantly moved to poetry.
Yes.
Not always good poetry. Sure. Fine. Fair. But.
And he's like, so we get this voiceover and all this lava and stuff. And then we find out that he's actually like, this is the speech that he's giving Lucas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Lucas is like, so what? Like, okay,
I like
science, but this is like a bit much, dude.
And so he talks about black smokers and how impossible and amazing it is that the same toxic chemicals that would destroy a river instead give life to these unique ecosystems.
Yes.
And this is starting to get Lucas. And then for some reason, I cannot fathom, he walks over to a cabinet, pulls out a drawer, has little hand tongs, reaches in, and pulls out this fucked up little squid thing, and says, hey, who wants a piece of this? What are you doing?
Being weird.
Roscoe.
Being weird. Well, and so Dr. Westphalen is there for this, in like, she looks like a dentist.
Her medical coat is very...
It's like a little medical mini dress with pants.
Yes.
She will never wear this again. Pretty sure.
And there is like this, what I thought was this embellishment across the chest. I'm like, ooh, I can't wait for a close up to see what's going on there. It's just her eyeglasses. It's her eyeglasses around.
Yeah,
like,
remember, she's old.
Yeah.
She and Bridger are old. They need eyeglasses.
She carries around her readers around her neck. And yes. You know what? Good for her.
But so she's just like, yeah, this is really exciting. We're going to play with all this bad bacteria.
She's really dismissive of this black smoker bacteria. And I don't know if that's in character for her.
I feel like it's less dismissive and more like, we are messing with things that maybe we shouldn't be messing with.
Cautious, even to the point of frightened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit, like, not her character, but at the same time, she would be the one who's like, don't touch that.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that.
Don't do this.
Don't lick it. Why are you licking it?
O'Neill, down. Down, O'Neill. Stop it. Ortiz with a bottle.
I was going to say, it would be Ortiz. It'd be like Ortiz and Lucas as O'Neill's like, I'm going to tell.
I love to imagine people watching this along with us and like, why the fuck do they keep talking about this Ortiz guy? He's done nothing. He's nobody.
Just wait. So they're like in the science area. Mm-hmm, and Raleigh, the scientist guy, mm-hmm. is like, show me my platform, Nathan. And so we cut to the bridge where they are putting the platform down or attempting to.
Yes. And this is our first look at yet another one of SeaQuest's little toys.
Yes.
The sea crab.
Oh, yeah. Well, because well, not on the bridge. So we don't cut to the bridge right away. Right. We're going to cut to the bridge. But yes. Yeah, so outside there is a Darwin is swimming around outside.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, is that Darwin? We should call him in. And so they all like are looking outside and our focus goes out there. And yes, there is a sea crab, which is a ship that's out there.
It is a piloted probe with like long spindly manipulation arms.
Like a crab.
Like a crab.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And it is messing with some sample containers. That is supposed to be bringing on board, and something goes wrong, and it, like, drops it.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens, which isn't good.
That's not great.
But no one seems too concerned at the same time.
We can't do science on that now. It's all messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess we gotta get another one. So, what we know with this platform is they're gonna drop this platform over mm-hmm. this vent.
Yes.
And, you know, drop this thing and they're going to get all these readings and all this information and it will be like speeding the process up from like, instead of like taking years for this knowledge, it'll be weeks. It'll be very exciting for all of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again,
Raleigh, the scientist played by Roscoe Lee Brown, is moved to metaphorical soaring language.
Yes. Yes. But you know, Lucas is gone, so Westphalen's like, shut up, the boy's not here.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to impress me. And we have to cut to the new credit sequence.
Yes, yes. This is the main credit sequence for season one. As you'd expect, it's a quick cut of a bunch of characters doing emblematic character things.
With sea creatures in
between.
With
lots of sea creatures and crashing waves, but most notably over, again, the Emmy-winning credits music,
yes.
A monologue in character from Nathan Bridger talking about his role as captain of the SeaQuest and the mission of the SeaQuest.
And it's, you know, the future, and da-da-da, and ends with, for beneath the surface lies the future. Mm-hmm. And, like, that really, like, sums up the show, is that, you know, the future of the world is below the water, because we got research, we got new minerals, we got all this, you know, commerce down here.
The summation of the premise of the show ends with a summation of the ethos of the show.
Yeah.
So it's time to put this dang platform in place.
Yeah, yeah, thing I was thought was happening earlier. It's happening now.
This is essentially a very long sequence.
So long.
Of people looking at screens that are fuzzing out because
yes.
there are currents to contend with and all these extreme conditions. And the big question is, can our tools handle it?
Yeah, because so here's the thing. This platform, which is pretty large when you look at the diagram of like the ship that's on these screens and like how big it is in comparison, it's very large. So it's on the SeaQuest, though. It's, like, at the bottom of the SeaQuest. It's not, like, the sea crab or anything else doing it. It's just, like, dangling.
Because nothing else is big enough, yeah.
What they're trying to do is lower the SeaQuest with this platform over the vent. And there's, you know, structural integrity issues going on, stresses.
The word sheer is thrown around a lot.
There's a lot of words. This is a very, very long tense scene with very tense music of like, oh no, is our ship going to break apart? Are we all gonna die? Are we gonna have to drop the platform?
Do we sacrifice the science mission to save the ship? And Raleigh's like hell you will.
And I'm like, yes.
Captain Bridger, how dare you?
So we got, you know, everyone's like bracing and holding on to walls as things vibrate and it's very tense. And
Hitchcock's hand is hovering over the abort button.
The big red button.
Big red button. With caution tape around it.
And Bridger's like, Ford, you know, should we call it off? Should we let it go? And he's like, no, like I got an idea. And so he is like, hey, Hitchcock, meet me at the helm. And we gotta pause and talk about the helm.
We gotta talk about the helm. So
the helm.
How do people steer this ship?
This is video game recliners with overhead controls.
This definitely feels like it comes from the wave of, like, VR interest.
These
would fit in Disney Quest.
These totally are Disney Quest.
Right?
And it is, like, it's this reclining chair that you get in.
That is suspended from above.
And yes, and it swivels, and there's, like, overhead, almost like... I feel like it's like how you would do like a roller coaster support thing.
Yeah.
But like this overhead thing that comes down that has your control panel and like your joysticks.
Your yoke. Yeah.
Yeah. And
then on the side, you've got like throttle levers for other controls.
And you got your little like view screen right at the front and you like lay back all like... I guess like you're driving your hot rod, but it's
a... and there's two of these. This takes two people.
Two people.
They got to be drift compatible, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You have to mind meld to do this. Except you don't. So I don't understand how like you need two people.
Is each one on one screw of the propeller? What? Why is it two people?
I don't know.
So the two of them get in these and with...
Kicking the other people out.
Just a little more tension, a little more time, more people staring at fuzzy screens and things lighting up red. They get through the shear and they get it in place. If these two are the best at driving the boat, why aren't they the ones who drive the boat?
They had to promote people.
This would be a great time for the people who drive the boat to shine. Make them characters.
The people who drive the boat aren't good enough.
They are silent extras. That is not...
They're not silent. The one dude talks. He gives like, he gives readings. Like we're at like 500 whatever and we're like closing in. Like he talks.
They don't have names.
No.
No.
But they, one of them talks.
Good job. Congratulations. They did it. Yay.
So they get it stabilized. In my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, you stabilized it. The platform's down. The platform's not actually like down. Like halfway through this episode, we find out like, oh, it's not down. We have to finish putting it down. And I'm like, what the fuck were we doing then? And how do you like keep your boat in place? Like, aren't you trying to put it down and then you're going to drop it? How are we like, oh, we've put it down, we've lined up, now we're just going to stay here somehow in this moving water?
Because you got to do the final adjustments, the fine tuning, once you're through the shear layer, I guess.
It just seems like this should be a much faster process once we get to this point.
I'd like to connect two threads we've mentioned, the set and new producer David J. Burke.
Okay.
Because when he came on, one of the things he said was, they really should have had people who make TV involved with this from the start and not people who care about science, because this set doesn't work. We had a lot of very positive things to say about the set design.
Yeah.
David J. Burke's point is, none of these stations look at each other. How do we film cooperation? How do we film any kind of interaction? Finding angles with more than one station in them is really tough. Everyone, when they're talking, has to be like turned 3/4 of the way around over their shoulder. It's not good TV, says David J. Burke.
I guess. I guess people are facing walls.
But it is realistic to what this sort of super sub would look
like. Yeah, yeah. You're not going to have everyone facing out in a random desk in the middle of the space.
But we will see. In future seasons, they change some stations around and you have people facing into the center.
Well, yeah, and they start to have different layers of stations. So that you get that dynamic of where you can see certain people behind other people. Yeah. There's some stations where you can see others. Like, if they're at Hitchcock Station, you can see others.
Right.
Because she has, like, she doesn't face a wall. She faces
forward.
Forward. Well, she's next to
the back of a lot of people's heads.
Yes. But there's other people there, and she can also look out.
Right.
So you can... Not all of them are like that. I'm just going to say. Also, the science stations really love to not have walls, actually.
Right.
They just got this, like, really long counter that's not against a wall. So, like,
full
they can.
Of unsecured glass.
They can do science with unsecured glass, and we can see everything they're doing. It does not seem safe. So, as they're dealing with all this, Darwin has come back on board from his swim out there.
And the camera keeps following Darwin around as the score turns to ominous wooden flutes.
Yes. As he's going through the tubes and checking on Lucas eventually getting to the bridge into the moon pool there that is closed because it was splashing around in all the turbulence of trying to like lower the platform. And so he's there and you're like, something's up. And we, zoom in on Bridger.
Yes.
He's like zoned out.
Like he's got a bad feeling about this.
About something.
About something.
This doesn't know what this is, but something. And then we go to like, or O'Neill, who's also very like distracted at his station of like, something feels off.
And suddenly he just snaps off his headphones, jerks up. Rushes to the moon pool.
At the same time that Bridger, like, snaps around and does the same thing, they rush to Darwin, Bridger opening the moon pool and, like, diving in to, like, lift him out of the water.
Yeah. Because
they realize something's wrong.
Something's wrong. They demand rebreathers to swim him to the sea deck.
Yes.
Where he can get attention.
Yes, because sea deck is where the main moon pool is that is within the science area.
So Westphalen rushes off to be a veterinarian. And
Raleigh's yelling like, my platform! He's like, you can't leave! You're the chief science officer! And she's like, I'm also the chief physician.
They need to do some hiring on this ship.
She better be getting paid double.
That shouldn't be the same job. This clearly demonstrates that shouldn't be the same job. That's her desk is too full.
I mean, it gets worse later, I feel like, with some of these roles that people take on. And they become the only person in their department.
So in the show's conception, in the show Bibles, there was another character, a Dr. Shimura, who was just the ship's doctor.
Yes.
So Westphalen could be just the chief scientist.
Yeah.
And at this stage, a man with an ex-wife half his age who's also on the ship, as discussed last time.
Yeah.
But his hook was that he, his like claim to fame, his personal project, was developing transplant tissues and even organs based from vegetable fiber rather than animal tissue. He experimented on himself. He saved himself from some disease or disfigurement. But the stage at which his technology was when he used it was at such a point where it requires very particular environmental controls.
Yes. So he was forced to live on the SeaQuest because the SeaQuest had the environmental controls.
Yes.
Needed.
Yes.
For him to be half vegetable.
He can only live, or at least only operate his transplant tissues in artificial environments like submarines or these underwater cities. He's basically under house arrest for the series while everyone else is going off on these adventures. And that would be one of his dilemmas. What an idea for a character.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist. Exists in the spinoff novels because those writers were given earlier editions of the show Bible to work from.
And it's been a while since I've read those books. But in my brain, like, I very much, like, imagine him with having, like, a lettuce arm.
Yeah, just, like, green and leafy on.
Do you ever, I don't know if you ever saw that. There was this book I had as a kid where there were, like, people made out of food.
Ooh, veggie, veggie, fruit, fruit.
It was, like, but it was, like, in a way that the food showed, like, the muscles, like, structure of the human body.
Okay.
I know, it sounds fucking weird. I know. I have no idea what this kid... It was a kid's book. It was a kid's book. Mm-hmm. But it was like, it
sounds
oh,
gross.
Here's like how your muscles look with bread or something.
Well, you can't show how the muscles work with muscles. That's gross. Like, that's gross.
Hold on. I gotta see if like I can Google this. I bet my mom still has this damn book. It was a weird book. It was like, and it wasn't like cartoony illustrations. Like, it was very artful.
Oh, well, that's, I'm glad it was artful.
When I think about him, though, I think about those illustrations and, again, lettuce arm or whatever. So I like to just imagine, like, okay, new doctor in this show is just walking around with, like, spinach arm.
I imagine it as that one Goosebumps cover.
I don't know what that is. I also like to think that he would have had, like, some plot at some point where, like, I don't know, someone smuggled in a bunny, their pet bunny or pet bird, and he woke up to getting his arm nibbled.
So anyway, Bridger and O'Neill get lost inside the tubes.
Yeah, because Bridger didn't think to put signs down there when he designed the place.
He says sarcastically, because there's not supposed to be people in the tubes.
Yeah.
How do you get lost? It's tubes. Just keep going in the tubes. It's just tubes.
Tubes branch off in different directions.
You just keep...
These are fancy tubes.
They'll go somewhere. But you pop out the tube and you say, all right, how close are we to sea deck? We got to take a left? Okay, back in the tube.
It's a very long ship.
It's a very long sequence.
And a very wide ship.
They take two separate scenes to pop up, take off their rebreathers, and have O'Neill freak out a little bit and Bridger calm him down. It's the same scene twice.
We have to have tension. It's a pretty cool tube, though.
It's a pretty cool tube.
It's for sets. Like, Sequest sets, do not hold back. And it's a pretty cool tube.
It's pretty cool tube.
So the thing I do think is funny, though, is that they're swimming through these tubes. And many of the times, they are along windows, which people are watching. And, like, no one is like, hey, go this way.
No one.
Like, hold up some directional signs. Write a little note.
Helpful crew.
And, they only get support when they finally run into, like, Lucas, who's like, ah, yes, I know where you're going.
It goes on too long, the tubes. But in one of the two nearly identical conversations, O'Neill talks a little bit about how it feels to have Darwin talk in his brain.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's like, man, I just suddenly heard Darwin in my brain. That's what happened. And Bridger's like, yeah. Not news to him, apparently. He's apparently used to Darwin talking to his brain.
So this is something that Sequest will return to every once in a while. Not necessarily that O'Neill is psychic, but the new age conception of dolphins and cetacean life.
Yes.
As a spiritual thing, as a something that will guide us on the cusp of psychic awakening.
All those weird stores at the malls were having a grand. They were like, fuck yeah, it's our time.
This is like a couple generations of Crystal Lady ago. If you weren't there, you have to trust me.
It's the stores that had the crystals and the dragons and the incense and the dolphins and the fairy statues, and once in a great while you can still come across one, but it's rare now.
But yeah,
those used to be like the foundation of the mall.
This is a conception of, like, tying dolphins specifically and a new age for humanity, and psychics are beginning to emerge together. That is a potent mix that shows up in a lot of places. There's a lot of like 50s and 60s sci-fi about that. New Age people, like I mentioned, all over the place with that. After War Gundam X has a whole arc about this with a white dolphin that is somehow a new type.
Oh, fancy dolphin. White dolphin.
It's not a fan of the crew to begin with.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So they do get Darwin to the moon pool without dying.
Yay!
And he is quickly put into like a harness apparatus, and they draw some blood, and Lucas is trying to talk to him through the his machine. And
it's a big yellow phone.
Yeah. And so they're getting down to medical business. Some time passes. Bridger comes back from drying off in some very islandy clothes now.
Yeah, it is significant that a lot of the events we're about to talk about, he's out of uniform for.
Yes. I like to think that he just still has that one uniform that he was left like on his bed. Yeah. And because he jumped into the moon pool with it, it's wet and he doesn't have any other uniform to put on.
It's hanging on the shower rack. Yeah.
So he's like back though and he's like, okay, so like what's going on? What do we know? And Wes Phelan's like, don't know, but I gave him antibiotics just in case. Yeah. She hasn't found out anything, running a bunch of tests. Unsure what's happening. She's like, hey, you know, shouldn't you be on the bridge? Shouldn't you be dealing with the platform? And he's like, nope, Ford can deal with that. Like, I'm not dealing with that. I'm here.
And so he's got to talk to his best friend, his very wet friend.
Yes. So he goes over to check on Darwin, and Lucas is there. And all that is being said by Darwin is that Darwin is sick.
Yeah.
And then he starts talking about dark, and light is dark and one. And he just keeps repeating it.
Yes, that is the central puzzle of this episode. What does Darwin mean when he says light is dark and one? And they immediately identify what the problem really is the puzzle of translation. Shades of meaning and metaphor across language is hard, but across species with an entirely different approach to language is hard. And how much of it is that? And how much of it is this experimental system in its technical infancy? Is this a computer issue? Where in this chain of systems and structures is the disconnect?
Yeah. And O'Neill shows up at this moment to also check in on how things are going. And has to bring up, you know, Darwin talking to him again in his brain.
Yeah.
And he mentions how he can speak six languages and a dozen more okay-ish. But like Darwin talking to him in his brain,
it comes at him sideways.
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing.
It's a whole different thing. And he's a dolphin. Like, he speaks dolphin. You're not a dolphin. It kind of makes sense. So Bridger goes back to his quarters,
where he is accosted by Roscoe Lee Brown.
Yes.
Something I wish would happen to me. I really respect this guy. He's had a great career.
He's very like, you know, this project is bigger than Tube Worms and Black Smokers. Like, look at my magma buoy. Look at this ceramic suppository I'm going to shove in your hands.
It's like a small rugby ball with slight fins on an end.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is where we first learned that, a classified aspect of the science experiment
that Bridger didn't even know about
is the platform is not only going to harvest smoker sludge, but shoot a buoy that is of such advanced materials, it will sail through magma and collect all sorts of data.
Yes. And he's like, so, you know, you can't stop this project. And Bridger's like, watch me.
He's got priorities, and those priorities are Darwin comes first.
Yes. So he calls up someone that he at first doesn't want to call up because he's like, this man's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But he decides, you know, I'm going to do it. Like, yeah. Tough times.
He calls his dolphin guy.
His dolphin guy. Malcolm Downey, the dolphin guy. Here's what's funny, is we find out in a little bit that he actually works at a dolphin research center.
Yeah,
but the way they approach
accredited.
The way they approach this dude is that he is a nut job who, like, is doing energy readings off of dolphins.
So, like, the first thing you learn about this guy is, yeah, it a half scene ago, Bridger's like, this guy's a fucking loon. But then when we catch up to the present, he's like, all right, I gotta call this guy. And who is screening his video calls, hiding from behind his Skype camera.
That is in his kitchen. And he's like, hey, you know, Downey, like, hey, it's Bridger. Or, like, he doesn't say, like, hey, Downey. You know, like, are you there? Hello?
Does he owe you money?
Yeah. Like, does he owe you money? Why are you looking for him? It's like, it's Bridger, you asshole. So he pops up, and then he's like, good heavens, are you in jail? Because apparently, Bridger's office looks like jail.
What's jail like in the far-off land of 2018?
Beautiful, apparently.
Seems nice.
I would go.
I mean, minimum security jail. I mean, he's Bridger. He's not a flight risk.
So Malcolm's like, oh, it's so good to see you. You gotta meet Mom. And brings his mom into the screen. And is like, hey, Bridger, meet Mom. And he's just like, hi, Mom. Because you didn't tell me your name. And then he's like, oh, wait, here, cousins, come over here. These are the cousins. We're having a barbecue.
Meet Captain Bridger.
This is so great. And Bridger's like, hey, my dolphin's dying. And he's like, I'll take this in the other room, one sec. And he leaves Bridger on the vid screen with his mom and cousins who just stand there like they're posing for a family photo,
silent,
arm around each other.
Silent
they
as
say
the grave.
No words. And they just watch him.
And you just know that someone like went the editor or the director went home with a stopwatch, how long it takes to get from like the kitchen to the home office, and made the pause that long.
Actually, I kind of love that.
In this conversation before he leaves to take it in the other room, which does take a while.
It takes so long. It's so awkward. I love it.
He mentions that, you know, every year the family has every year they have their big family barbecue. Mom blimps over and stays for the week. Long range travel in this world is blimp based.
I did not catch that he said blimp.
I think it's for...
Did our closed caption say blimp too?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think it's about emissions. I think we're positing a future where air travel follows air currents instead of putting hydrocarbons into the upper atmosphere with jet engines.
Well, I hate to break it to you. They never talk about blimps again
they
in this
never
entire
talk about
show.
There are a lot of little bits of world building that point to, like, pro-environmental regulations that the world has adopted that would cause huge changes to day-to-day life as we live it.
Yes.
But only barely touch life on the SeaQuest because it's a very, very different context.
Yes.
One of them would be blimp travel. They're already on a boat.
So once he gets around to his office, Bridger fills him in on, you know, we've run all these tests. We don't know what's wrong. Mm-hmm. His white blood cells are elevated, but like nothing's coming back.
Getting a quick rundown of recent behaviors and encounters.
Like, and like, where have you been?
Does not mention the black smoker.
No.
Didn't think that was.
This is something that's always killed me in this episode because he's like, hey, well, where have you guys been? Like, what water has he been swimming in? Has he been exposed to anything? Like, there was a red tide in the Yucatan. Etc. etc. And Bridger's like, nah, he's just been around the boat.
You know, boat stuff.
We're not gonna talk about the black smoker that like he swam through and that we've been hanging out at for a few days that is known to have insane levels of bacteria that like can kill things.
Completely unknown, unstudied bacteria. Could be anything in there. Yeah.
Bridger.
There was that sample tank that cracked open when we were trying to pull it off.
Uh-huh.
goes unmentioned.
So Malcolm's like, I need to see him. Mm-hmm. Bring me a dolphin. And he's like, okay, bring me a dolphin. So he goes to the bridge.
Yes.
And he's like, Ford, where are we at? And he's like, okay, we got like 2 hours till we're going to set this platform down. So it's been like, I don't know, 7 hours since they like lined up the ship. And again, how are you keeping the ship in place and not having all these stresses
they're
that you were worried about?
Through the sheer layer. It's still, above them. They're below it.
Still. Okay. But Bridger's like, well, can we just like release it now? And Ford's like, yeah, I don't see why not. Like, then why haven't we done that? And so he's like, okay, well, we'll release it. And Raleigh is like, no, you can't. And he like comes running towards Bridger, and Ford has to like hold him back as mm-hmm. Bridger just like just slaps
that
it.
Button.
Slaps that red button.
We forget the fine tuning, forget the perfect alignment. We're dropping it right here, right now.
He's like, your platform isn't going anywhere. It's fine.
Heck, they can come back, pick it up, and move it 6 feet. It'll be fine.
So Bridger leaves the bridge to go to the maglev, and Raleigh follows him and mm-hmm. is just screaming like, who gave you the authority? Who made you God? And I'm like, he's the fucking captain of the ship. He can do what the fuck he wants.
I think him taking unilateral action and slapping that button while he's still in his, like, denim shirt and shorts is one of the most significant moments that he is not in uniform for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raleigh also refers to Darwin as an ingredient in some parts of the world.
In bouillabaisse.
And,
I don't think that's how you make bouillabaisse.
I feel like a more in-character choice would have been for Bridger to punch him in the nose.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He doesn't.
He has some restraint in the maglev.
Instead, they go to the moon pool, and he orders Raleigh to look Darwin in the eyes.
Because dolphins are powerful. There is... They touch the mystic somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cool.
Again, crystal ladies.
I really like dolphins, okay? I was forever sad when I went to, like, SeaWorld as a kid, mm-hmm. and they had, like, the dolphin touch.
Yeah.
A dolphin never came near me close enough that I could touch a dolphin. Oh, I never got to touch a dolphin! I've never touched a dolphin!
You've touched so many stingrays.
And I have touched a beluga whale.
Yeah, you tickled its tongue.
I tickled its tongue and felt its little wiggly melon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice. But I want to touch a dolphin.
You know who hasn't touched any wiggly melons?
Hmm?
I was going to say Lucas, but it would also go for O'Neill for sure. Ford hasn't, because he has to read the manual first. This is a sexless show. I'm banging on that point.
For now.
Bridger is the only one.
The most action in this show, actually.
Bridger and once Ortiz starts coming out of the background are the only characters that I think have had sex. Okay, Wes Phelan. She
has a child.
She has a child. Also, she has the vibe
of,
like...
She had three ex-husbands or something?
Wes Phelan kind of has the vibe of someone who's really looking forward to menopause, because now she can just go wild. Let's go.
Actually, the ex-husband thing was in the deleted scenes.
It was.
We don't even get to know that.
Uh-huh.
In, like, regular...
Also, the mention of her kid is in that deleted scene.
You find out about the kid later.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Raleigh does look... at the dolphin. He mm-hmm. looks at Darwin. He looks him in. And Darwin starts spewing off the whole light is dark in one. And something you think kind of moves in Raleigh. And he accepts it and he leaves. But it doesn't last long because he is now in
then,
like...
God hardens the heart of Pharaoh as he rushes off.
Because now he is on a Zoom call. With Admiral Noyce.
Admiral Noyce's hobby is restoring antique lawnmowers. That's the most retired dude thing I've ever seen.
He's not retired, though.
He is a man of a certain age. The antique lawnmower restoration age.
And so he is there with, Ralia's West Phelan and Ford with him, mm-hmm. and he is going off into Admiral Noyce about how, he's like,
going
you gotta
over Bridger's head, yeah.
Relieve Bridger of command, that he is insane, that he needs to be, like, committed, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So Noyce is like, well, what do you guys think? And they're both like, no, he's no. fine. I mean, he's upset, he's sad.
He's real stubborn, but he's not a lunatic. We're all safe. It's fine.
Raleigh's like, well, I'll go above you. I'll go to the Secretary General. I'll do this. I'll do that.
He starts slapping the off-the-shelf corporate intercom telephone.
Okay, here's, like, my favorite thing is that all their, like, communication control things for, like, the vidphone and everything... Mm-hmm. is just the, like, the conference phone.
Yeah.
From 10 years ago.
Yes.
What was it called?
Cisco.
Cisco. The Cisco, like, conference phone that's, like, kind of triangle-y shaped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just that on walls. It is literally it. And it's on walls. It's on the tape. That is their technology. And I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Because it's like the Star Wars trash cans and ice cream makers. It's just, we took this conference
yeah.
phone
yeah.
that definitely in like 1993 was probably really fucking expensive.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And like we're just slapping it on shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I love it.
And slap he does. Just trying to find the one touch dial for the Secretary General of the UEO. If any boat has that, it would be Sequest.
Before Noyce gets off, he's like, no, Bridger's, whatever he decides is it, like, not dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
And once he's off, Raleigh's, like, freaking out. Ford and West Phelan, like, grab him, and West Phelan's, like, taking his pulse and is like, oh my god, you need to lie down or you're gonna have a heart attack. And so they radio Ortiz to stream in some fish videos, some fish live streams from the whisker that's out there, so he can have something calming to look
they
at.
They sit him down to just watch the fish channel. And this man hits one delay, a 2-day delay in his project, and he starts bemoaning about how his entire life he's been neglected and unloved.
Everyone's abandoned him! And she's like, shut up, watch the fish!
I love this man, I love this fussy, fussy man. He's covered in blankets!
And so, back in the moon pool, Bridger is visiting Darwin. And Darwin is like, Bridger's family.
Mm-hmm.
Darwin loves Bridger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, we all, I think universally, we all want to think that our pets and our unspeaking companions would say the same if they had a magic yellow phone.
Yes.
It is a really gratifying fantasy to see represented on film.
Yes. And
you can't watch the scene without looking at the dog curled up next to you and being like, yeah, buddy, I know.
I love you too.
Yeah.
I would murder for you.
And she has. Oh, I gotta cut that. Oh,
what?
Fuck.
You can't tell people that. Well, and you said something to me before we watched this episode that you were like, I can't believe they try to, like, kill the fish. You called them the fish. You
yes.
can't believe they tried to kill the fish in the second episode.
Yes.
But the thing is, like, it's kind of insane. In my opinion, this episode, like, makes everyone so invested in Darwin.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
it, like, you have to create that relationship now.
Also,
for everything to be, like, as heavy as it is with him later.
Also, in production, it was more like the fifth or sixth episode.
That too.
Right. And so I think I haven't seen this in writing. I don't have sources to point to. So my supposition
uh-huh.
is that just like the network and producers were like, hey, we made this premiere. It's not exactly the show we're making now.
Yeah.
They wanted to move up the new guys episodes as early as possible.
Yeah.
We don't see another Tommy Thompson produced episode until episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does cause like some continuity issues, like some costumes come and go as things go.
Yeah.
Things that I don't really care about. But what I do care about is there are statements made about character relationships yeah. as this episode goes on that feel artificial when they're just said. However, we will see them be true in a few episodes' time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did watch this in production order, I think those moments would not feel artificial.
Yeah. Well, and there is, like, something comes up soon where they talk about, like, Lucas's relationship with Darwin. And
right.
it's kind of like, when do they have time to build a relationship?
Exactly what I'm talking about.
Because it is episode 2. But there is something, again, with, like, drawing you in this really cool dolphin.
Yeah.
That now yeah. you're, like, going to ball your eyes over. And you're invested now.
I'm sure these are the conversations with, like, okay, which one's episode 2?
Which character do we cover for episode 2 that's going to, like, bring you in? Obviously, it's the dolphin. Who cares about the people?
We got a half dozen episodes we could put ahead of the line for Viz effects. Which one's episode 2? Hook them with the dolphin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are loading Darwin into a tank to be transported to the island.
Yes, to Kaikos Key Research Center and Barbecue.
Yes. and so they get him there, and Malcolm's there checking him out with everyone else around, and he is just constantly like telling everyone to get out of his way mm-hmm, and that they're mm-hmm. not helping him or making his job easy, and like shoos them all away, like, go eat in the cafeteria, like, let me look this over, except you, Westphalen, you stay here, you stay mm-hmm. with me.
I think that's a real place. At least it's a place that keeps pointing me to, like, beaches.co.uk and other, like, resort things.
Well, Turks and Caicos.
Yeah.
That's...
Caicos seems real.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all.
I don't know if it's real in the sense of how they have it portrayed, but it is a place.
Okay. You don't know if there's a dolphin research center run by some sort of debt-dodging family man?
No.
They talk about this guy like he's a crazy hippie, and he's just really casual.
Turks and Caicos Islands are 40 low-lying coral islands in the Atlantic Ocean, a British overseas territory southeast of the Bahamas.
Okay.
So, there you go. It's by Haiti, Dominican Republic, just north of there.
And that's where Malcolm lives.
Mm-hmm. Back on the Sequest, Ford brings Raleigh some food, and he is just zenned out in his recliner watching the dolphin live stream now.
There is a deleted scene from this episode. We didn't watch it before the episode, we watched it after. So at this point, I was wondering, is that deleted scene like Westphalen slipped him something? Because he is mesmerized by the dolphin channel.
I mean...
He's a brand new man.
It's pretty peaceful. It looks pretty cool. I feel like he's taking it, like, a few notches too far, but... and so he's like, Ford leaves and he's watching the dolphin channel
mm-hmm.
really intently.
Yes.
And it's like drawing him out of his chair. And he has like some internal revelation.
Yeah. I keep thinking he looks like Yoda, like all bundled up, just ready to die rather than answer any of Luke's questions.
Yes.
I love watching that scene in Return of the Jedi because Luke asks 10 things and Yoda's only answer is, shut up, I'm here to die. Stop it.
I just remembered. So in the Rings of Power show,
mm-hmm.
I thought the one guy looked like him. I think we looked this up when watching Rings of Power and it wasn't. Because I think he'd be far too old now.
You're right. It's not him, and I think it's also not the guy from Halloween Town 2.
Yes!
We thought it might have been him too.
Yes!
Who does have a connection to Sequest. More on that eventually.
Bridger, O'Neill, and Lucas are just kind of standing around this research center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bridger and O'Neill are in their khaki uniforms.
With shorts
uh-huh. and knee highs.
Hell yeah.
It is a look.
This is how I go to the beach.
It is a look that I'm glad doesn't come back that often.
Only when I go to the beach.
I very much prefer the jumpsuits they wear.
Even though turtlenecks disagree with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would much rather see the jumpsuits than this. Malcolm comes back and is like, hey, Nathan, like, let's go for a walk. And so they're walking down the beach.
And Bridger's like, so my dolphin's dying, isn't he?
And he's like, yeah, probably. And goes into something, though, about, like, you know, we know so little about how they heal themselves, like, how they, the way they are.
Yeah.
He says it earlier, actually, that, like, marine, like, science, like, this is really, like, voodoo at this point. Like, there's so little, you know, you're just trying things. And you're, like, hoping and wishing and, like, this has got to work, right? Yeah, so there's not a lot he can do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As they walk down the beach to the snack zone?
The camper hut?
There's a camper hut full of drinks and little nibbles and a table set out for four.
Tiki torches.
This is a full-service dolphin research lab.
And so he grabs some beers, and as he's coming back out, we see O'Neill and Lucas coming with Raleigh.
Mm-hmm. He finally pulled himself off the couch.
As they're coming closer, Bridger makes a statement about how this is going to be really hard on Lucas. Darwin was, like, the closest thing he had to a pal, which is that thing we were talking about okay, some time's gone by, I guess. Maybe you could have gotten more than one jumpsuit in that time, Bridger. I'll just point that out.
And again, Malcolm, being the guy he is like, hey, kid, you want a beer?
And he's like, he's 16.
All right, I'll get him too. All right.
Yeah, okay, let's do this right. And so he, though, brings out some non-alcoholic ginger beer.
Yeah, he gives him ginger beer. I had you going there, big guy.
I'd like to think he was like, it's ginger beer, Bridger. Lucas, wink, wink.
Yeah. It's ginger Bud Light. and they age it in beechwood.
So Raleigh is like, Bridger, I understand why you did what you did. So how long? How long till your dolphin dies?
I also like the bit where Malcolm is taking requests for what tunes to put on, and he starts mentioning, like, Southern American music, right? He's got blues, he's got Zydeco, there's a few more, and this fussy science grandpa is like, bring island music, we're on an island, aren't we? Let's be honest, Malcolm is obviously a parrot head. They just didn't predict that Jimmy Buffett would still be recording music in 2018. Yeah. Very short-sighted of them. It seemed like an easy call.
Some back and forth continues again with, like, well, how long are we going to be there? And actually Raleigh asking, like, so is your dolphin going to die? And there is this moment where, like, Bridger looks at Lucas because Lucas has not had these words spoken to him yet. He's probably gonna die.
And there are two things about this episode that I really, really enjoy. One is the character of Raleigh, the fussy science grandpa. I love this man. And the second is how is really this scene and everything that leads to it and comes out of it, the way that an illness means that grief begins before death.
Yeah.
And all these guys being dudes, having a round of drinks, and beginning that process together. Mm-hmm. It's like, damn, this is real shit.
Yeah.
There's feelings on my TV. Holy shit.
There are feelings. People are sad. People are upset.
O'Neill, out of nowhere, has this burst of anger and frustration at Raleigh for being heartless and just so concerned with his dad. When there is a living creature that is scared and in pain.
Yes. And he, you know, he calls him a selfish man and like just is gutted by what is happening. And so as they are there and toasting to life and death, because I guess that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Lucas, for some reason, like, says the light is dark in one.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of, like, thinking out loud, which draws Malcolm's attention, and he's like, oh, what's that? And so they explain the whole, you know, we got this device that Lucas invented, and Darwin can speak, but it's kind of hit or miss.
Immediately gives an idea for what light means in this context.
Yes.
Light is knowledge,
yes,
he says, and this, like, is the first domino that falls, and within 15 seconds, they have a full translation of this sentence. It's so silly to me. It's silly to me. This unsolvable puzzle, you just poke at it a little bit, and they're like, oh no, we got it, we got it. All right, good job, team. Hands in, let's go. It's seriously like they're sitting by the sea. C for Catwoman level deductions. But they're all satisfied with the results in the end.
And so the whole thing, you know, knowledge is light and darkness is the absence of knowledge.
Mm-hmm,
and he's faced with losing what he knows.
Yes.
And he doesn't want to die alone, so we must let him go.
And one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.
Yes.
Two can be as bad as one. It is the loneliest number since the number one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But one is the loneliest number.
Yeah, yeah. And so they are like,
I'm glad you love me.
I do love you. I love you so much. Love you so much.
Three Dog Night Base.
And so they're like, okay, we gotta let him go. And they're like, no, he's too sick. And no, dolphins will support their pod. If someone is sick, mm-hmm, they'll support. You just gotta find his pod in the ocean. That's not hard.
So this scene turns out to be about making Darwin's end-of-life decisions. They want, yes, to release him to die among his family, hospice style.
Yes. And so, we also have to do some science, though.
Yes.
Because we have, you know, recordings of dolphins' clicks and whistles, or Darwin's clicks and whistles, so we can take that and, like, use the computers to try to find that,
mm-hmm,
because they'll be very similar. What we learn, like, they give exposition to later is that female dolphins normally stay with the pod and their, like, clicks and whistles change a little bit, and male dolphins leave, but theirs stay the same.
Yes.
And so you can, like, see the similarities within the pod.
So because because Darwin is a boy dolphin.
Yes.
He should sound nearly identical to Mommy Darwin.
Yes.
Who I call Lamarck.
Lamarck?
Yeah. It's a joke for the history of evolutionary theory.
Okay. Yeah. So they're going to do science. They all talk about the things that they're going to do to their, yeah, computers and whatnot.
It does involve sending the whiskers out to and beyond their maximum distance to do sonar sweeps and listen for every, yeah, dolphin they could possibly find.
Raleigh does give them, like, his blessing, though, like, mm-hmm, try you must.
Yes.
Very Yoda-y.
His heart grew three sizes that day watching the Dolphin Channel.
Don't tell Westphal that. She's gonna, like, make him lay down again.
I want to see him with a hot water bottle on his head and the thermometer sticking out of his mouth.
So on the bridge, they're scanning, they're listening to whistles, they're finding a pod, but it's not the right one. They're sending the whiskers in a different direction. They're piping the sounds in also to the moon pool where Westphalen is with Darwin. And so then they find another pod, mm-hmm,
and this one makes Darwin really perk up, and the lines on the computer screen are a 92% match.
And it's like, oh my god, that must be it. But Darwin's freaking out so much that he has a seizure.
He's got the zoomies.
They can't contain him. So they head to, like, rendezvous with the pod. Mm-hmm. Bridger and, like, Lucas and all them rush down to the moon pool. And they let him out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Bridger family. Darwin loved Bridger. He doesn't want to leave, so he's got to, like, chase him off and send away. Go on, get. You belong out there.
More like, just go.
Just go.
Just go. And it's very sad, because, like,
he does his little hand sign.
And they all are watching, and the thing is, like, as far as they know, this is the last time they're going to see Darwin, because he's going away to die.
Gotta chase your best friend away so he can die with dignity Sundays on NBC for the whole family.
And so he leaves, and they're watching the, like, whisker footage of the pod, and they see Darwin, like, with his pod, and O'Neill's like, should I have the whisker follow them? And Bridger's like, no, we've wasted enough of Raleigh's time. Mm-hmm. Gotta go to the Black Smoker, because Darwin's gonna die.
So Raleigh starts hovering around Westphalen.
So in the science station,
yeah,
Raleigh's hovering and talking is like crazy, and Westphalen is like, hey, no, we are not risking another container opening. Mm-hmm, we're not like doing X, Y, and Z until I've given the okay.
She wants at least a day's worth of safety checks on these containment pods.
Yes.
And he's like, come on, I just want my sludge. Give me my sludge.
And she tells him to go eat. Fill your mouth with something other than words.
Because again, when the dude gets passionate, it's so flowery.
It's so much.
It's so much.
So then we have a montage of everyone being sad.
Yeah.
Lucas is sad in his room.
Yeah.
O'Neill's sad at lunch. Bridger is sad on the bridge. And Ford's like, you're really depressing everyone. Yeah. And so Bridger's like, I'm going to go lift heavy things.
Mm-hmm. He goes and takes a turn unloading these massive metal sample container pods.
Yes.
These things are like 3 foot diameter.
They look like bombs.
They look beat to shit. Like the paint is chipping all over them. I love the look of them, but they certainly aren't brand new.
Mm-mm. He's in the pool with them, helping all this happen. Well, Westphalen gets a call, and she gets a call from Malcolm, who's like, what the hell are you all doing?
Because Darwin's blood work came back, and there are unidentified bacteria, and some very rare bacteria that only come from black smokers. I'm glad someone figured it out, Jesus Christ.
And he's like, do I have to paint the picture for you? If this messed up your dolphin so bad, what do you think it's going to do to anyone else? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh shit, I didn't think about this. And I was like, what the fuck? Yes, you did.
We learned that this entire project, not just the magma buoy, is classified. So this would explain why Bridger didn't mention it earlier. I wish there was a scene where he wrestled with this conflicted duty.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think it would be more in character for Bridger in that moment to say, you know, damn the regulations, we happened to pass near a black smoker.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we were by it.
Yeah.
But it comes off like they've forgotten.
Yes.
Versus, like, this is confidential and classified and we can't say it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird.
It's weird and it's wrong. It's just the wrong call.
It also makes them look dumb when we know that they're all, like, incredibly smart and scientific and they're problem solvers. And I'm like, Westphalen would have totally thought about this before.
Yeah.
Lucas would have thought about this.
You don't have to be, like, the big science genius of the ocean to think the current thing might be related to the immediately preceding thing.
Yeah.
In this dolphin's life.
Well, and this is a weird episode even to think about that it was filmed as, like, the fifth episode. Because I feel like it doesn't capture, like, their smarts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for being 5 episodes in, like, you should know when you're filming that where these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
But so Westphalen's trying to call, though, the moon pool. She's, like, radioing, like, do not open it, don't touch it. But they can't hear it because there's, like, I don't know, a water jet going in the moon pool?
Yes. And as we keep cutting to Bridger trying to open this thing, it's stuck. So he's just beating it with a pipe. He looks like a monkey trying to bust open something for, like, the enrichment at the zoo.
But before anything can happen, a dolphin body slams him from the water. Just, like, free willies the shit out of him.
This whole ending is so silly because, like, this was never the stakes of the episode.
No.
The stakes of the episode was Darwin's illness and the emotional journey of the crew following along it. The danger of the smoker sludge. It's not something you even notice in the opening act of the episode. It never is mentioned again.
I mean, I notice when they're like, oh, this container, like, busted open. I'm like, that can't be good.
Yeah, but it's unremarked on, unfollowed up on, and then suddenly it's the most dangerous thing in the world that the climax of the episode is all about.
Yes. And so after this dolphin body slam Free Willy's the shit out of him, that he falls into the moon pool, we find out that it's Darwin. He's back and he's okay. And he brought his mom and she brought seaweed with her as a gift.
Because dolphins have discovered herbal medicine. This is another thing that I think maybe is orphaned from an earlier draft or could have been improved on a later draft. They're bringing medicine. No one is sick. What if a person got sick from the smoker alongside Darwin?
And then they'd be like, oh my god, we use this special seaweed to cure this other person.
Yeah.
Or we could also, revisit this anytime in the future. When Darwin needs his chicken soup.
Yeah, yeah. But what happens in effect is they answer the question of why Darwin is healthy by just, bragging. Look, we have this.
Wes Phelan's like, I did science on it. It has antibacterial properties. Okay. That's nice.
That's nice. Good for you.
Save that one piece of seaweed for later, because you don't know where it came from. O'Neill also has to check in with Bridger and be like, I don't feel him in my brain anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because there will be psychics in future installments of Sequest DSV.
Yes.
I do not recall O'Neill having any, interaction with them at all. I don't think O'Neill, the slightly psychic one, comes up again.
No.
No.
Something I always thought was weird, because, it doesn't, come up again for him. Like, Bridger, it does.
Mm-hmm.
The way they approach this, it always, to me, seemed more like, it's not that they're so much psychic as it is, Darwin is, mm-hmm, putting mm-hmm. this in them. And I was always like, I feel like it's weird that it's O'Neill and not, Lucas or something.
Right, right.
But I guess that implies then, it's because he's more psychic. But, is he? Is he really? It's weird.
Yeah.
And so a
thing to keep an eye on for O'Neill is that there's not really a thing for O'Neill.
No.
They try a couple times over the course of the show, but none of them come back.
I feel like if, spoilers, mm-hmm. season 3, yeah. We only got half of it.
Yes.
Okay? They canceled it halfway through. I think season 3 had a trajectory for him that we did not see.
It's the funniest thing. The funniest thing is thinking that, the season 3 lineup of the writers' room is finally, we found an angle for O'Neill. We broke the character. He's got a thing now. This is great. And they introduce it in the very last episode.
And that's it. And we canceled it.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. So in our final scene of this episode, we're back on the bridge. And they are back over the black smoker, and they're getting ready to launch the buoy,
mm-hmm.
and fucking Raleigh is like, release the magma buoy! Godspeed on its quest!
It's sea quest. Well, magma quest, actually. That's a whole different show.
My brain just started singing the, Sail On song from Titanic the Musical.
Sure. All right.
It's sail on. And it's Godspeed, Titan. It's this whole epic thing. yes. He's put magma buoy.
It is going straight to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And below. It's going places even Titanic didn't try to sink to.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it. That's it. And so the credits play, and for the first time,
yes,
we get oceanographer and explorer Bob Ballard giving us facts.
Yes.
These facts are about black smokers.
And how they were discovered in 1979.
How the water there is hot enough to melt lead.
Yeah.
And how these environments hold bacteria that could, important word, could process pollutants. What pollutants? What does process mean? What do you mean could? I don't know. We have hope. We have hope for the future of the ocean.
Hope for the future. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. But darling,
yeah.
What are your Bob Ballard facts today?
My facts. I looked up giant tube worms because they were talking about tube worms.
They get a couple shout outs in this episode. Maybe the most famous thing about the black smoker ecosystem is the tube worms.
Well, so they were also discovered in the 70s. And the discovery was unexpected because they were there looking at hydrothermal vents.
What are these tube worms doing here?
Yeah, they were like, oh, what are these? And, like, because they were looking at hydrothermal vents, there was no, like, biologists with them. Mm-hmm, there was just like, oh, look, worms! and the giant tube worm can grow over 9 feet 10 inches.
Yeah, so can I. They're not special.
No, you can't.
I just haven't tried.
You haven't tried. Well, try harder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to need new pants.
They also have a lifespan of 100 to 300 years.
I'm working on it.
Yeah?
I'm going to need a lot of new pants.
I don't want that lifespan. those are my facts for you. What facts do you have? Do you have Bob facts for us?
Oh, no. When you were looking up Bob facts, I was looking up, like, the director and the writers.
Oh, I thought you were looking up facts.
I was, just unrelated to ocean things.
I thought we were both bringing facts. I was looking up
I brought Hollywood facts.
I thought we were both bringing Bob facts.
Okay. it's a new show, folks. We're trying things out. We got a...
You don't have to bring Bob facts.
Gonna bring a brand new segment to you next time.
Oh?
I think next time we should introduce the Movie Star Minute. But we'll leave you a week to figure out what exactly that segment might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we have come to the end here, so that means you need all your reminders.
Drink your water. Drink it. Drink it right now.
I mean, yes. Be hydrated. This show is filled with a lot of water.
Good idea. Do you have a multivitamin in your life?
Take your allergy pill. You know. Eat a snack. But also, leave a rating and review wherever you listen.
That's a multivitamin for the soul. You'll feel better.
Yes. Leave that multi-star, aka 5-star review.
Yeah.
And let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can also tell a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Bring them along on this wonderful journey with us.
Did you know the narrator of Babe Pig in the City is a fussy ocean man? Oh, I got some people that can tell you all about it.
Yeah.
That's just an example. It doesn't have to sound exactly like that, but you know. But thank you all for joining us as we continue our ongoing sail. I like to think we're still on the maiden voyage. It's just a long one.
It is a long journey.
Yeah.
You know, like 3.5 years of the maiden journey of the Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But thank you. Thank you all again for listening. Until next time, I'm Grant.
And I'm Elena.
And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.